Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.9 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery, and of course, I am Al Warren. Now joining me as the co-host today, we've got Mr. Mel B, or Michael Brown.
Oh, yes, exactly. Hey. One of the Spice Girls.
You're going to be. You're going to be. New book coming out and everything. Ooh.
Oh, gosh, yeah. November 2nd, Murder, Madness, and Mayhem.
Yeah. HarperCollins. Yeah. So that's great.
Yeah.
You'll be on tour. Or I'm sure you'll be on tour with like Lady Gaga or something.
Well, I am going to Nova Scotia for Christmas, but that's because that's where my family lives. And I'll probably do a book signing in the mall in the town of 8,000 people that I'm from. So,
well, that's great. Maybe you'll sell 8,000 books there.
Well, hopefully. I'm pretty sure I'll sell a couple because Mom is shilling at the local newspaper.
Yeah, she's camped out there every day.
Have you heard my son's written a book?
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's good that it's good to have support. You know, you need
it. Really is, yeah.
Stressful times. It's a long haul, and it's always a lot of work getting it out there and all the edits and rewrites and all that stuff. So it's great. That's fantastic. So I'm sure it'll do well. You did your own Audible, too, right?
I did. I did the audiobook for it because
nobody else would.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I can't read this. This is terrible.
Yeah. Oh, that always scares me. I don't think I could do an Audible. That would be too much.
It was interesting. I think you could pull it off. The way they do it is pretty straightforward. So if you make a mistake or you stumble, they just have you do it again right away. So.
Oh, is there like an auto-tune for Audible?
I wish there was.
Well, that'll be next. That'll be next.
I think it was 20 hours in a studio doing it for...
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
For a 12-hour book, which isn't too bad, yeah.
No, that's great. Well, you know, you have to kind of redo things and take breaks.
Yeah, I had to go back for some hiccups, but, you know, it was fun.
You wouldn't have hiccuped if you weren't drinking. Bad. Anyway, so now today we have got, speaking of crime and right down your alley, we've got a true crime author here, and I believe it's his first book. So the book is called The Flat Tire Murders, and it's the unsolved crimes of a South Florida serial killer. Now the author is Michael P. Burns. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, Al. It's a real pleasure to be here.
We'll see if you say that at the end of the show. So now I wonder, so you, this is your first book, right?
That's correct. First book. And I wrote it last year, and it's coming out now at the end of 2021. First book.
Yeah. What made you decide to go into book writing? Because it's not like you're a 20-year-old kid. What was the draw to writing a book?
Well, after looking into these cases and being a follower of unsolved cases and true crime for a long time, I thought it was something that was important to put out into the public. And these cases, unfortunately, there's just not a lot out there on them. So I felt that they were worthy of having their own book written about them. So that kind of propelled me to do that. And 2020, with the whole COVID thing, locked down, gave me that opportunity.
How many murders are there in the flat tire murders?
Well, if you look just at the actual flat tire and canal murders, there are at least 13 victims in 1975.
Oh, wow.
Right. And there are a number of murders that preceded the flat tire murders that we can talk about as well. But in those cases, there were 10 to 11 victims in one set of murders and 6 victims at least in another.
How did you find this murder case? Like, how did you come across it?
I think I was interested in South Florida, obviously, because I grew up there in Miami. And I was kind of wondering what was it like in the 70s and, what was the sort of culture like down there. And I came across, I think it might have been on a Wikipedia page or something about these murders. And there really wasn't much more than that. So I thought, it's something that's worthy enough of a little blurb on Wikipedia. I thought, well, what's really behind it? And when I started, my research, it really led to a discovery of something that was really important at the time and then just sort of faded away. And really no one remembers it to these days, except the families and some law enforcement.
What was it like investigating a case from the 70s? Like, did you find it hard to find information or find witnesses or police or anything that were around at that time?
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of people, we're talking 45 years ago, so I was able to find a couple of detectives that were kind enough to speak with me about their experiences. And really just because I'm not in South Florida anymore, it kind of limited my ability to go speak with people. But, it was difficult trying to find out, because a lot of the parents are deceased from these victims. And it was a challenge to try to figure out who's who. Are siblings still around? Does anyone want to talk about this? But, I was able to get some leads that I thought were quite helpful.
So maybe describe what the flat tire murders were, like maybe the basic MO and kind of how it went.
Sure. They're referred to as the canal murders, mostly when you delve into the past in the mid-1970s. But they've kind of taken on the moniker of the flat tire murders because of two of the victims who were within 9 days of each other were abducted from a mall in northern Dade County. And their cars were found with flat tires, and their bodies were found basically in the same spot. So those two murders of Ronnie Gorlin and Elise Rapp kind of gave the name the flat tire murders. But it connected in with the other murders due to the fact that many victims were being found in canals, a lot of them very close to each other. But the basic MO was, from what the law enforcement believed, was that this was a very approachable, nice-looking, well-spoken person that was able to convince these women to come with him, probably not using force, but probably through deception and that sort of false trust, especially with the flat tire victims, where he likely deflated their tires and offered them help to get them away from the scene.
Why did you go change the name to the flat tire murders from canal murders? Like, what was the thought behind that?
Well, the name was the canal murders in the 1970s, and that's what the media back then referred to them as. I thought that the basically after I spoke with some of the detectives, that the name the Flat Tire Murders kind of, I think, captures more of the perpetrators, like you said, MO, how they operated, and their approaches to these women to get them to go with them. So, you know, they can be either the Flat Tire Murders or the Canal Murders, but I think Flat Tire sort of, like I said, captures how this person went about getting these women to come with them.
So did these murders continue or did they just stop?
You know, they really took place in 1975, and after that, they stopped. You know, obviously there were more murders in South Florida after 1975, but really the string of murders repeating every month or so, pretty much stopped at the end of 1975, and really just went away from the public consciousness. But for that year, it was definitely something that law enforcement was telling women about, and really concerned about, and then they just stopped.
And so what I wonder, do you think that the culprit, I guess we'd call him, moved to a different state, or did this pick up somewhere else, do you think?
I would think that probably there was either, you know, the person was either in jail for something else, they moved. I think there are a number of different possibilities, but based on what in my research in true crime is, that these people can't really stop. They can't really stop their compulsions, with a few exceptions. And, you know, it's not a 100% accurate statement, but I really think that the person probably moved out of the area. And when I went back to South Florida a couple weeks ago, looked at some of the locations, there was a connection that I seemed to make between the city of Medley, which is a industrial city out in the far western part of Dade County. And it's really a trucking and industrial city. And I think that there's definitely a possibility that this person could have been a trucker. They could have moved on to a different location. That's just a thought. There's really no conclusive evidence one way or the other what happened to this person.
Yeah, it's always interesting. But it's kind of like a lot of the cases back in the 60s and 70s. You know, you hear about the Zodiac Killer every year you know, remember the Golden State Killer and things like that. So quite a few of them just stopped. It stopped happening. And a lot of them don't get solved. So it's kind of one of those, it's a big question mark.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, if these cases ever do get solved, it'll be fascinating to figure out why 1975 was such a terrible year, and where this person went after that year.
Yeah, I think 1975, the Captain and Tennille had all the hits, so maybe that was it in the television show. I don't know. Maybe something threw them. He went crazy, you know. What were the victims? Now, the victims themselves, was there any connection with those victims? Like, were they friends? Did they know each other? Or was it the same type of woman being assaulted? Was there any sort of regular thing that was going on there?
Sure. They were all white women, and they were, I've seen photos, they're very, you know, very attractive women. I don't know if they share any real connections other than those two basic characteristics. They were all, however, very young. And what really shocked me is that three of the victims in the Flat Tire Murders / Canal Murders were 14 years old. So these were, one was 15, two were 17. They were very, very young teenage girls. They were not prostitutes. They were not drug addicts. They were sort of just general middle class girls out in Dade and Broward County. In terms of connections, two of the murders are definitely connected because they were both killed together. That was Barbara Schreiber and Belinda Zetterauer. They were both 14 years old. And they were shot to death next to a canal in Broward County. So those are definitely connected. And police strongly believe that the two Flat Tire Murders, just due to location of the victims and the MO of the perpetrator were both connected as well. The two flat tire murders, interesting, both women were Jewish. They both had license plates that had the letter E on them, and they sort of began with an E and gave the rest of the digits, but those were denoted to clarify what cars were leased or rental cars. So there are definitely some connections. Some of the murders are absolutely related, but the frequency at which they occurred and the location of the bodies in the canals led law enforcement to believe that this is somebody out there doing this.
So the MO wasn't always the same.
Right. It wasn't always the same. Many of these girls just disappeared, walking home at night. The two that were shot, Barbara Schreiber and Belinda Zetterauer, kind of tricked their parents and said, "Oh, we're going to spend the night at each other's houses." And they went off to kind of walk around, and they were abducted and found the next day next to a canal. So, yeah, there's definitely some connections. And law enforcement was kind of split at the time, whether these are absolutely all related, whether some are related. The medical examiner at the time said at least five of them are definitely related to the same perpetrator.
Well, what is it that ties them together then? If it's different MOs and different things that kill them, like you say, some of them shot. And so if there's different ways, modes of death, what is the tie for these victims?
The tie is really the frequency at which they occurred throughout basically almost every month in 1975. Several of them were found in the same canal, which is the canal next to US 27. So it seemed that there was definitely an area that this person liked to leave the victims in, the ages, and again, the frequency of these abductions and murders.
So you were saying that the police and that were talking about it. So this was something that made the media in Florida for sure, that was being talked about. How many actual suspects did they have, or did they have a kind of a drawing of someone that they thought, or did they have any sort of warnings for people in that way?
Well, you know, they definitely had warnings. They were telling women, before you get in a car, make sure that the tires are inflated, make sure there's nobody in the car. And another warning was do not hitchhike. And that was a thing in the 70s that was really different from our view now of, sticking your thumb out and getting in a car with a stranger. It was a lot more frequent back then. So they were warning women not to hitchhike. There were a few composites, but based on what I found, it seemed that they were really just getting random information from different people. I saw this guy at the mall. I saw this guy walking around, but there were no composites of who these women were with at the moment of their abduction. So there really wasn't a lot to go on.
Wow. So, and then, like you said, it just sort of stopped in Florida anyway. It just sort of just didn't happen anymore, and so it kind of faded away.
Right.
So in your research, and when you come down to it, did you ever think that this person, or maybe it's more than one person that's doing the killing, right? Or do you think?
Right. Yes. And when I was able to speak to two of the detectives, three of them actually, but two of them gave me their impressions, 45 years later. And they were pretty steadfast in their opinion that they thought Ted Bundy was the perpetrator. And that really kind of threw me for a loop. And I had to dig into that a lot more because obviously he was in Utah in 1975.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
So it was really interesting to have these two seasoned detectives, of course, retired by now, still to this day say, you know, I'm absolutely certain it was him. It was Bundy.
I was just going to say, what is it that made them so certain it was Bundy?
Well, they one of them went to talk to Bundy when he was on trial in Miami in 1979. He went to the jail and spoke with Ted Bundy, and he brought up the name of one of the flat tire victims. And based on his response, he thought definitely he had a connection to it. He said he would talk to the detective about it more after his trial was over, but he clammed up after that. They also thought that he fit the sort of the MO of what this person would be like, very good looking, smooth talker, able to convince women to come with him. And some of the crimes that Bundy committed, especially the one in Utah that he got arrested for eventually, the kidnapping of Carol DeRanche, he did use a very similar MO. It wasn't flattening tires, but it was presenting himself as a law enforcement officer and convincing Ms. DeRanche that she needed to come with him, which she did. So, you know, there's that, characteristic that they strongly feel that he was involved. They can't place him there, which is obviously a big problem. So, and I think that kind of shows that law enforcement was just, you know, climbing up the walls, trying to figure out who this person could be.
So was there any evidence that Bundy was in Florida at that time?
Well, what's funny about Ted Bundy is that, you know, obviously he was a very versatile person in terms of being able to get around. He was in Utah, he was in Idaho, he was in Colorado, probably other states as well that he never confessed to. But he was certainly not adverse to traveling into different jurisdictions. Whether he was in South Florida in 1975 seems unlikely, and I kind of use that caveat because there was a series of there was some time back in the summer of 1975 when he really didn't commit any murders. He most likely was in Utah, but again, knowing who he was and how he could travel, really can't 100% place him there.
Mm.
So I think I'd say it remains a possibility, somewhat unlikely, but you know, still something to keep in mind.
And just the fact that he spoke to the detectives and alluded to maybe I'm involved doesn't necessarily mean he was.
Right. Right. And he did like to play games with law enforcement and sort of allude to things that he probably didn't have anything to do with. But again, it's just something to keep in mind. It wasn't actually Ted Bundy's, you know, he had been to Miami in 1968. As a delegate to the Nelson Rockefeller election when the Republican convention was held there. So he had been to Miami in the 1960s when he was about 22 years old. So obviously also he was tried there in 1979. So he has some connections. Whether we can place him there, you know, in 1975 is a bit more challenging.
Wow. So what was left behind? Like, what kind of evidence do they have now? I mean, this was the 70s, so not all the police forces were very collecting the same that they do now for evidence and keeping it. Was there a lot of evidence kept from those cases?
You know, there wasn't. Some of the medical examiner's reports, the two from the flat tire murders, seem to allude, and again, they're using 1975 sort of terminology and forensic science, but there may be DNA evidence or some sort of biological evidence at the time. Whether that, you know, has been preserved to this day, we just don't know. But there, based on my reading of it, there was some evidence collected. There was a pubic hair collected from one of the victims, and there were bite marks as well. So there is some evidence. Whether it's, you know, sufficient 45 years later to nail this guy remains to be seen.
Hmm. So what's your thought on it ever being solved?
You know, I'm hopeful. I think one of the big instances in true crime that made a big impact on me was in 2018 when Joseph DeAngelo was arrested and charged as being the Golden State Killer, and he later confessed. You know, my jaw hit the floor when it was announced that day, and I just thought, how could they possibly solve a case from, you know, 40 plus years ago? And they did. So I'm cautiously optimistic. I think they are still working on these cases, and I do talk about in the book some of the instances of crimes from the 1970s that Dade County has solved recently. So there's definitely a chance.
Well, so what was the area like in those times? Like in 1975, was that kind of a dangerous area to be in, or?
Well, you know, it came as a surprise to me that in the 1970s, South Florida was one of the most dangerous places in the country. In 1975, Dade County had the fourth highest crimes per capita. Broward County had the sixth highest in the United States. And in 1975, Florida had the third highest crime rate in the U.S. So one of the sheriffs in 1974 or three, I think it was, said it's like an invading army has arrived and has taken over. So it was definitely a crime ridden area in the mid 1970s.
Mm. But people weren't scared back in those times. Like, people would, like you say, just get in a car and hitchhike and do things like that. There wasn't a lot of terror going on.
Right. And that's another thing that really struck me was the hitchhiking angle, just because it was so prevalent back then that young girls, you know, teenage girls would find that this is a good way to get around. You know, nothing really is likely to happen to me. If it does, I can handle it myself. There wasn't the terror, I think, that came out in 1980s, 1990s about, you know, what kind of evil people were lurking out there. There was definitely a more innocent attitude towards life in general, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, they didn't wear seatbelts either. Right. So
right.
I could just jump out of the car. Someone attacks me. What's at the end of the day, what is it you want people to get out of your book?
I want them to know that these cases occurred. Just, you know, I think in the Golden State Killer case, the fact that it was in the public consciousness, either online, through books, through documentaries, people became interested in the case and really put, I think, public pressure on law enforcement to really throw the resources at this case and to keep looking at it and keep digging. And they eventually were successful. You know, I think the same thing could happen here, provided that there's enough public consciousness about these victims and that they're not forgotten.
Yeah, I think it's important. You know, and times were so different. You know, did you find it difficult writing about something from the 70s and I guess you'd have to sort of explain. A lot of people don't realize how different it was.
Absolutely, and in terms of you know, what law enforcement had to work with, a lot of it, you know, think of the Ted Bundy case, which occurred in the 1970s. He was eventually arrested in 75. He was convicted on bite mark evidence, basically, in 1978. There was no DNA. There was very little else in terms of forensic evidence that could really nail somebody like they do now, but based on his bite marks. So sort of a primitive, you know, method of solving a case. So they didn't have what law enforcement has to work with now, databases, and just sort of the abundance of information that's out there. So they basically had blood typing. They could compare hairs, you know, does this one look like that one? Exclude people, maybe polygraphs, but it was sort of on your feet, get out there and talk to people, forms of investigation. So they were limited, definitely, in what they could do.
Now, did he sexually assault these girls and women that he killed?
The flat tire victims were sexually assaulted. Ronnie Gorlin, one of the victims in the flat tire murders, was she had bite marks on her breasts, and there was biological evidence found on Elise Rapp, who was the second flat tire victim. Her genitals were stabbed as well. So there's definitely a sexual component, at least to those two.
So he was a violent killer. Like he maybe made them suffer some, or.
Yes, and that comes through in the medical examiner's reports as well, that there may have been what they described as gentle choking, which I, you know, thought, what the heck is that? Sort of choking lets someone, you know, become revived, and then it choked again. So there was definitely a domination and a sexual component to those two crimes, at least.
Gee, that's like the Rodney Alcala in the California doing
right,
that.
You know? Right.
Maybe there's something in the water or something. So how was this? How you said you were writing this during COVID. How was that for you to write during COVID?
Oh, it was great. Oh. You know, there was little else to do. And, you know, there's you know, the internet. And once you have that and you can get in touch with people and start looking, it was actually a very cathartic experience to do that while, you know, the rest of the world is kind of at a standstill. So it was a great opportunity to do something that I thought was important.
So outside stresses and things like that going on didn't really affect your ability to write then either.
No. And, you know, it gave me an outlet. It gave me something to do during those times. And you know, it was really just a great way to spend some afternoons and evenings, you know, after I was done with work to dig into this. So I found it, you know, to be pretty, pretty interesting.
Yeah, it certainly would be, you know. How were the police that you talked to from cases back then, were they sort of surprised that someone was looking into these old cases?
You know, they were very, very guarded, very professional. I don't think it took them by surprise that these old cases were being, you know, looked into by someone. But they were certainly responsive. I really thought that reaching out to these guys would maybe not result in anything, but immediately they responded and told me everything that they remembered. So, I don't think they were surprised so much as they were, again, very professional and hoping that, you know, these cases could be solved. I think they probably took it pretty hard when investigating these cases, and they really came up with nothing. And one of the detectives said, we spent hundreds of hours. We did surveillance. We talked to every sex offender. We, you know, we really pounded the pavement to work these cases, and they came up with nothing.
Yeah. And they only had so much to work with. So, well, so at the end of the day, are you happy with how it turned out?
I am. I'm happy that it's out there and that people can read it. They can get in contact with me. I've got social media up related to the cases, and I'm happy to interact with people that are interested. And I'm really glad it's out there. You know, this may not be the end of the story. We'll sort of have to see. But I wanted to get this out there also because, you know, it's a case from 45 years ago. So people are getting older. A lot of the parents of the victims are deceased. The detectives that I spoke to are in their 80s. So sort of time is ticking here to resolve these cases.
Yeah, of course. Do you have a website as well?
I have Twitter. People can find me on Twitter at Flat Murders. I also have Reddit, Instagram, and a Facebook account, Flat Tire Book. That's Please. Probably the best way.
All the dangerous places.
Yeah.
You have to be careful there, you know.
Right.
What's next for you?
I'd like to keep looking into these cases and just sort of keep pushing as much as I can to find new information, to keep in contact with people out there. I don't know what particularly will happen, but these cases still fascinate me, and my goodness, seeing them solved would be fantastic. But yeah, definitely, I think keeping on these cases is my immediate goal.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty interesting. It's a great case, and hopefully it gets resolved. Then you can do a book too.
That'd be great.
Well, okay. Now, the book we're talking about is The Flat Tire Murders. It's the unsolved crimes of the South Florida serial killer. And our guest has been the author, Michael P. Burns. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Michael.
Get the latest news and opinions from Eric Shapiro from the House of Mystery website in the Shapiro Report.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end!
By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.